Welcome to the Deer Society Podcast. Here's your host, Brian Lemke.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Thanks for joining us on the Deer Society Podcast. I'm Brian Lemke, joined today by Mike Dukart and JJ Dukart. Things are kicking. We're ramped up. We're in the middle of the season and we're kind of in that rut phase, right? Where things are kind of happening in the woods and happening at different times in different spots across the country. Here in Minnesota, you know, we have gun season that kicks in. So we're in the rut here. We've had some warm temperatures, and we've actually had some warm temperatures all across the U.S., it seems like, especially the Midwest. So we're going to be talking about strategies for the upcoming week here. You know, we're in that stage of rut. It's November 12th. You know, we're going to talk about what you should be doing, where you should be, and some of those strategies that might help you out in the next week and coming weeks. So you guys have been out hunting here in Minnesota. I've been in Kansas kind of the last week. What have you guys been seeing here in Minnesota, and what have the deer kind of been doing?
I got the chair that's falling down slowly. So basically we're hitting peak rut. Seems like a lot of the big bucks have been just finding these does, going in these thick pockets and kind of holding them there, breeding them there, and basically going from doe to doe, hot doe to the next hot doe. Small windows in between where you can maybe catch them cruising for a little bit, a half day or so. Otherwise, they've been kind of what you call locked down. I think that's going to continue here for the next week or so. We do got some cold weather coming in, probably a 40-degree temp drop, you know, as this weekend rolls in. So that's going to pick up a lot of the deer movement now. Will that change big buck movement? I don't know. That's something to be determined. I still think big bucks get priority, and when there's a hot doe, they kind of lock down in those big, thick valleys or funnels or wherever it may be, depending on the terrain you're hunting. But a lot of those, you know, secondary bulls, I was thinking elk, secondary bucks, I would say, like the tier two in our area, probably 3-year-olds, maybe even some 4-year-olds, a lot of 2-year-olds. They're still flying around, daylighting a lot. They're really vulnerable these next, you know, week, 10 days, daylighting a lot. And they're just cruising. They don't necessarily have priority when it comes to a hot doe and estrus. So they're kind of bouncing around. I was going to say like more of that satellite bull situation, you know, where the herd bull kind of gets priority. Satellite bulls kind of bounce around. I would say that is the case here with the 2 and 3 year olds right now. You're just seeing them fly around, trying to find any scent of a doe coming in to estrus. And they're just working the terrain. I mean, they're hitting trail camera. We're seeing them, we're filming them, going to the neighbors, coming back onto our property. I mean, they're moving right now. So that's the caliber of buck that somebody's after. I think just time in the tree is going to pay off big time coming up in the next 7 days. If you're looking at the upper age class, which we're looking for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old buck, game's a little bit different, and we're going to have to get lucky, I think, this next week.
Yeah. Lucky or just, you know, more, I'm going to change a term. Okay. Hopefully it catches on. Instead of saying lockdown, I'm going to say locked on, because the big bucks, the ones that JJ is talking about that we're after, they get locked on those does, but they still get up and move. You know what I mean? So they'll get up. In fact, we caught them with the doe in daylight. One of the shooters got up and the doe went to water and he followed and he got some water. So it's not like they don't move at all, but you know, they're locked on them does for sure. And so if they're not moving, he's not moving. And that's kind of the scenario where you are. Now, the behavior of that doe has completely changed too, though. So because of the behavior of the buck changes, the behavior of the doe changes. So the does, when they're going into estrus, they don't like getting harassed by every single buck. Like JJ just said, the second tier bucks, they're just pushing hard. They're running around like crazy right now. And in our particular area, those second-tier bucks are actually pretty legitimate bucks. I mean, they're 2, 3, and 4 years old. And so those bucks are aggressive right now. So if that's the tier that you're hunting as your top tier, well, there's strategies that this is the best possible time for you to go hunting. You know what I mean? If that's happening in your area. I had a second tier buck come in on my last sit, and I saw 4 bucks that day. None of them were the ones I was looking at, but this was a real nice up and comer. And I just looked up in the middle of the day. You don't expect it to be there. And he's walking up this tree line right on the edge of the food plot. And I'm like, oh boy, it's my first sit in a tree. So I had to, you know, the trees are a lot different than a blind. So you got to get all your gear together. You got to get your psyche together. And, you know, of course, my hearing is pretty much gone. You know, when you get to be my age, you lose your senses. And so my eyes caught him. He's walking up. I'm like, oh. And so I'm analyzing right away, you know, analyzing this buck because he was close to being, you know, there. And I wasn't sure if he was one of the guys that we were looking for because he kind of looks like him. But anyway, he comes in, he takes a right. He starts going toward an area where I don't want him to go because there's gun hunters over there. So I grabbed my call right away and I did a doe bleat. And we were talking about this that day. We're like, well, JJ's like, do some calling, because he was calling a couple of days before and he called in a bunch of some deer, you know. And so anyway, so I grabbed my call and he said they didn't listen to the buck grunts. In fact, the does were actually would clear off when he did a buck grunt. And so right away I grabbed the call, did a doe estrus bleat. Meow. Meow. Just like that. All of a sudden he just locked, turned around, walked 25 yards right underneath my stand. And walked off. But then I got a good look at him, and I'm like, oh, well, no, it's not the one I'm thinking it is. And then I'm texting JJ like, what 10 point did I just pass up? You know, and so we walked through which one it was, and very impressed that deer's got a lot of good potential. If he doesn't get shot, you know, because he's so vulnerable right now.
Well, there's a couple good points there. You know, from a calling standpoint right now, doe bleats can be super effective. Again, and when you're calling, it's communicating and thinking about what those deer are doing and what they're looking for. So you get a buck that's searching, you know, and you can tell he's cruising. A doe bleat can be super effective, you know, you slide it down on the extinguisher and super easy and could be super effective because that deer, what's he doing? He's looking for a hot doe, right? So you're painting that picture with the doe bleat. So when you're calling, that can be super effective this time of year. I want to talk about strategies of some of those older class bucks, you know, so let's talk about your tier one bucks now. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about what the tier two bucks are doing. They're cruising, they're looking for a doe, they're trying to get in, trying to find anything they can, covering ground. Those older bucks, like you mentioned, we're getting into that lockdown or locked on phase. Still a really good time to hunt. You know, guys always say, well, lockdown phase shouldn't go or it's going to be tough. I agree with that. You got to get more lucky, but those deer, they're in these tighter pockets. Those does are still going to move. The bucks are going to try to keep them locked in an area. But like, if you can be where that doe's at or where that buck is locked on with that doe, it can be super effective. And here's the other thing. I think the strategy on my end is you still got to be in the woods. Like a deer, a buck, a mature buck will get locked on with the doe for a certain amount of days. And then he's going to come off. And what's he going to do? It's not like he's going to be done now.
No, he's going to go look. And I'm wondering, do you know, and I don't know, how many days do they lock on a doe? I mean, an older doe, they're usually the first ones that'll come into cycle. You know, they know what's going on. And by the way, when I said doe behavior changes, they quit getting social when they're starting to go into estrus. And then they go solitude. And they try and hide because they don't like being harassed. So they're going into that thick stuff. They're going into the dry ponds and areas where they're not going to be easily seen and smelled and being harassed. So that's why those big bucks, when they get on one, lock on one, lockdown, whatever you want to call it, it seems like they're not around, but they're around and they still get up and they still got to move. And maybe if they get on a good buck, the doe, she'll feel more confident getting up and moving around when she needs to get a little bit of water or whatever the case might be, or browse, because she knows she's not going to get harassed. I don't know. I'm just throwing mud at the wall here.
Yeah, when you watch those mature bucks that are locked onto a doe this time of year, they are going to do everything in their power to not let a lesser deer come and take that doe. So, you know, that could be a point. We don't talk about the doe behavior a whole lot, you know, and that could be, you know, she could feel more comfortable because that buck, any other buck that comes in there, he's going to do whatever he can to keep him away from her. So interesting theory there. You know, as far as days that a buck is locked down or locked onto a doe, I don't know exactly, you know, just from experience and what I've seen, like in the past, we'll have a buck come in and he'll spend 5 days in an area with a doe and then he'll be gone again. I have been in Kansas and Iowa here the last couple weeks, and there, it seems like their magic number is 3 days. They'll get a buck, he'll go off with the doe, he'll be there for 3 days, and then boom, gone again. And especially in Kansas, those guys, man, they're like, if a buck comes in there like that, you got 3 days to kill him right there. And if you don't, he's going to be gone again looking for that next doe. So it's kind of a guessing game. There's a little bit of luck there, but you just got to be in the tree this time of year, because as soon as that buck gets off that doe, he's going to be cruising and searching again. Trail cameras this time of year, my cameras, for example, have been slower, but there will be certain pockets that light up and you can tell that there's a hot doe in there. If you get a hot doe in an area, or you get a buck that, you know, Reveal sends you a picture of a buck in an area, like, it's probably a good move to try to get in there quick and make a move, because with the way that the deer are moving this time of year, like, take advantage of any intel that you can get. If there's a big buck in an area, jump in there and go to try to kill him before he's going to move again. So, you know, it's there's luck to it, but, you know, strategy wise, there's a lot to be said this time of year, just getting in the tree.
Yeah. I think the whole chasing the camera thing is weeks past, trying to find a buck in an area. I think he's going to stick around there just because he likes that area, is not going to happen. But, you know, if you get a lot of bucks, like last week we had 3-4 3-year-old bucks on one camera hitting a water hole. In my mind, it's, you know, I'm thinking, was there a big buck, you know, just in the thicket, you know, 100 yards away that whole time? Possibly. So there could have been a shooter in there. I went in there and hunted the next day at the blind and didn't see a deer. So it's almost like that whole shift, like whatever was in there, maybe there's a hot doe, all these bucks are running around, you know, fighting, chasing, trying to, you know, be the breeder buck. That disappeared the next day and it was completely gone and it was just dead over there. So, and also I hunted that spot a couple of days prior and saw 7 bucks. So it was just real hot for a couple of days and then it cooled right down. So kind of waiting for that next wave. Yeah. Whether that's 2 days, 3 days, that a buck will take a doe and, you know, breeder in a certain area. I don't really know what that is, but it seems like a couple of days for sure. And then it's a shift and it's a whole new area or it's a new group of bucks, but yeah, it's either like, it's really hot or it's not. And then yesterday when I was hunting too, and it was super, we had a big warm front come, so that suppressed the deer movement quite a bit. Daylight activity was down a lot, but it seemed like even though it was slow, like one of the big bucks showed up on camera right there that night after, you know, I was done hunting. So it's like, maybe he was in there, maybe it was just too warm for him to move. Maybe he was on the doe, but, you can be real tight to him and not know they're there, especially in these thick spots. So maybe a couple of strategies. You know, maybe find this real thick areas and just hunt the downwind side. Maybe a good strategy would be, you know, try to get between two thick areas, whether those are draws or some swamp areas or whatever the case may be. Try to find that travel corridor between. That could be another good tactic coming up in the next week or so.
Or we had all that heat here midday's this last been, week, and so midday is when they were really going to the water. So yeah, that's a really good strategy.
Midday has been really good lately. A lot of cruising midday. Seems like I would rather hunt midday than almost the first few hours in the morning, but you never know.
Seems weird, but that's what's been happening.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of, and we were talking about this in Kansas with that midday movement, and, you know, you think about this from a turkey hunting standpoint a little bit. So, you know, when you're turkey hunting during the spring and, you know, you get these toms and they fly down and they get henned up right away, and then there's guys that swear that, you know what, I'm not going to even get aggressive with these birds until 9, 10, 11 o'clock, hens go on their nest, and then toms start cruising. I do think there's something to be said about that for deer hunting as well. I think those bucks, like, they start moving at first light, does are up, maybe they're feeding, so they go to those areas that those does may be feeding in, and they check those does. And same thing in the evening. They want to check those does, right? Because they know where those does are at and where they're going to food. And then, okay, they check those does, maybe chase them around. Those does go back to bed. That's why I think then those bucks are like, okay, I got to cover some ground now to, you know, try to find another hot doe. So then they'll go and they'll check these different bedding areas. And I think, you know, it's just interesting. We think about that a lot, turkey hunting, but I think that kind of happens with deer hunting too. And I could be completely off on this, but I'm thinking about it from a different perspective. It's easy to think about turkeys doing that with the hens going to nest. But I think these bucks, again, their testosterone levels are high from a behavioral standpoint. Like, they're looking for a hot doe. They want to breed. Like, that's why 10 to 2, you know, those late morning hours, early afternoon hours can be really good if you're in those spots between a bedding area or in the timber where bucks can be cruising, can be really, really good.
Yeah, and one tactic I deployed last week, which I haven't done for quite a while, I waited until about 9 o'clock to get ready and set up and go to the stand. The wind was bad early on. It was a west wind. It would have been bad for this stand location. It was blown right into the bedding, but it was going to shift to a northeast. At about 10 o'clock, it said it was going to shift. So I got in there around 10 o'clock, got set up. You know, we do all the self-filming and stuff. So I'm putting in new brackets, got the fourth arrow, those 3.0 brackets, and kind of getting the stand all set up. First time in that spot this year. And the wind started to shift, and it just worked out perfect where it was just a great wind for me from, you know, 9 or 10 on. And that's when all the bucks were moving. Like 10 o'clock, got in the stand, doe came. Then a, you know, 2-year-old buck or 3-year-old buck. And then it was like every hour another buck would come through, like the whole day, all the way till the afternoon or evening when I got out. So I waited because I didn't, not only was the wind bad, but I didn't want to go into this new spot, you know, try to set up all this stuff in the dark. I wasn't really familiar with, you know, the tree yet, wasn't really set up, didn't know how the deer used the area because I've never hunted there before. So just kind of used those first few hours to, you know, let the deer kind of do their thing. Jumped in, and then I saw a ton of action midday. So I was downwind of kind of a transition between two big bedding areas, and I was downwind of that. A lot of the deer crossed about 40 yards out. So I, you know, visually, I got to watch that movement all day. I know where I'm going to move the stand next year, probably. I don't think I'd do it this year. And it just, it was a very consistent spot where these deer would cross. So looking forward to making that move and maybe even hunting that spot again here in the next week. But just a nice tactic I have not used recently where you wait until light and then go in.
Yeah, and the other thing is, once again, if you listen to what we're saying, we're talking about the deer behavior, but really the buck behavior, which is what everybody is interested in, is really based on what we're, and this is what all these stories are about. What are the does doing? What is their behavior? You need to think that way. When I hunted the other day, there was still a group of four or five adult does hanging together. They're not an estrus, okay? But yet there was a single doe, adult doe, with a button buck yet, which is kind of unusual this time of year. She did kind of like kick at him a little bit, didn't want him too close. So she's getting ready to go into estrus. And of course, it's natural for her to kind of push him away anyway. And on camera, I saw a big adult Roman nose doe right where one of our shooter bucks had been nocturnal, but he'd been showing up there consistently. And I thought, oh, is that him? You know, flipping through because I don't have my glass reader glasses on. I can't see real well. So I just saw a big body deer right at that picture, you know, like that buck always shows up. No, was that? No, it wasn't him. And I'm, oh, that's kind of weird because she's standing right there, checking out the licking branches, looking like she's ready to pee on there and everything else. And it wasn't a day or two, and I swear that's the same big Roman-nosed doe that we saw him with when he got up and they went and got water at Hidden. And so that just kind of clicked into my mind. And so he was hitting that particular area, those different spots where he knew that doe might go or where she had been going. Because remember now, they can identify who each other is by smell too. It's not like, oh, there's a doe in heat here. No, it's, hey, that's Bertha, man. She's the one, you know. I know she's the one I want. And she's going to want him because she's the older doe. She goes in first. So they know who each other are, you know, and they know who they want. Now you get into that second tier and that third tier where that kind of changes. That's more like junior high and senior high, and they're running around with their heads cut off. So just think about that doe. What is their normal behavior, and in what state of mind are they in during the process of going into estrus, pre and post, and all of that stuff? Now that big doe is going to show back up, and she's going to be with other does again, probably in the next day or two. That's my guess. And she's going to continue to do that pattern. Well, if you're a buck, where are you going to go? You're going to go where they've been going so you can figure out which one's next. And remember, these top tier bucks can't breed all the does if you have a lot of does like we do. We're kind of at a point where I think our bucket is about full for does. It's really good, but it's not too many. but it's not definitely not enough. So we know some of these satellite bucks are going to be breeding these other does too, because if he's on her for 2, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, there's other does that are going to be going to estrus, and there's other bucks going to be breeding them. It's just going to happen. That's the way it works. So just try and think big picture, you know? And this is the time of the year where I'm going to go in and I'm going to take chances on my wind cones. In other words, if I'm going to stand where it's like, maybe, and I kind of know the behavior of the travel patterns and the corridors, I'm going to go super, super scent control, and I'm going to go in there and take a shot. If I think my instincts are telling me that this is, could very well happen here, I'm going to be a little bit riskier than I normally would be before all this starts to happen.
Yeah, I want to go and break down a little bit of strategy for my Kansas hunt, just because it was kind of a cool hunt. It was a tough hunt, but we'll break down some strategy. And I think we're transitioning a little bit, you know, even past this point now. And Kansas is a little bit behind where we are with the rut. But I was hunting a farm that there was not a deer that the people that I was hunting with down there knew of on this property that was like one of those upper echelon bucks. But you know, it was one of those farms that when a hammer shows up this time of year, and historically happens every year, this is where he shows up. And so we went in there and hunted, and we were hunting this sweet pinch point and in this kind of corner of the property. And, you know, when we got in there, we hunted, and the first night we saw a pretty good buck. Saw a few other bucks, and just wasn't the buck I was looking for, but saw a lot of deer. But about 200 yards away, I could see this alfalfa field. And when I say alfalfa field, it's not like an alfalfa field that we have up here. Like this, it looks like brown grass, but there's some little green blades in there that maybe some alfalfa lived, you know, and it's been super dry. But we could see this field, and deer flooded to it. I mean, does were out there early, 20 of them. And then as it got later, bucks started to show up there. We were seeing a ton of action. So anyways, long story short, we ended up sitting one more night in the spot we were in. And I said, man, we got to make a move. We got to move up to that alfalfa, because we kind of saw the same thing, a few less deer up there, but then they all went to the west from this alfalfa field. So we could kind of see that from a distance. So we moved, we went, hung a stand, we hunted this alfalfa field. And that night, deer came out there, saw some does, saw a pretty good buck up there, but they all went west again. And we were coming in from that direction, and there was nothing really that I saw or could see with the naked eye, not being familiar with this farm, why all these deer were going west. So again, we sat in that alfalfa stand the next night, saw the same thing. All these deer, they were coming out, and there was a deer parade over to the west. I'm like, what is going on? There's got to be something going on over there. And it's not just bucks, it's not just does. When they come out, they're all going that way. So I get on Onyx, and I'm looking there, and I'm like, there's water over there.
I was just going to say, it's got to be water.
And I'm like, man. So now, granted too, like we have hot temperatures. It's 75 degrees. It's windy, super windy. And so went back, it got dark, went back, and I'm like, hey, like, is there a pond over in that west corner? And they're like, yeah, but we don't think, you know, it's a drought this year. There's no water anywhere. So I don't know if there's water in it. And I'm like, I can tell you without seeing it, there's water there. So the next day we went in there, we took the morning off, and mid-morning we slipped in there, looked, and it was like, I cleared the trees and it was like an oasis. I've never been to Africa, but this is what I pictured going to Africa and walking into one of those water holes, because it looked like there was 400 head of cattle in there by the tracks and the sign and whatever. I'm like, bingo, here we go. This is where we got to be. So found just a lone cedar tree. It was like the Ben Rising tactic. Like we hunted, had enough cover where we hung stands 6 feet off the ground. And we hunted there the next two nights, and man, did we see, I bet we saw every deer on that property. It was wild. That's where all the action was. Like these deer, does were going to water, bucks were coming in there because that's where the does were. They needed to drink too, but they're coming in there, they're grunting, they're chasing them around. It was pretty cool. We had a buck, Adam was with me, and he said, man, I swear I can hear some cracking behind us. And I couldn't hear it, wind was strong. And he said it to me twice. Now after the second time, I'm like, okay, we're going to see. So I took my black rack out. I just tickled them together. Man, it wasn't 5 minutes. Boom, that deer was directly behind the cedar tree. And it was a pretty good buck. Directly behind the tree, and he's standing there. And you can tell he's just trying to figure out what was going on. And then he sees the does over by the pond, and he's chasing them around. Just cool, cool encounter. But, you know, it was observing what those deer were doing, seeing what the does were doing, and then going after that spot. And sure enough, the bucks were there. Now, that being said, limited window to hunt. There wasn't a buck in there that I saw that it's like, man, I really want to kill that deer. So the last night we ended up switching spots and we had this huge front that blew in and it was raining and nasty and like, well, we got to get out there and hunt. You know, it was supposed to break towards dark. But man, we loaded everything up. We had a rain gear on and we get in there and they already had a stand and this property is kind of cool. Like this new spot that we hunted, it was this lone group of cottonwoods. There was probably five of them in a row. And then everything else around it, you could see, I mean, for a long ways. Now there was this tall kind of mesquite brush and grass, so a lot of places for them to hide. But like you get in there and you're like, I could see a deer for a mile. So we slip in there and I get up on the stand and I'm going to hang the camera stand for Adam. And as soon as I step on that platform, I look to my left. And there's a big buck laying there 50 yards away. And he is looking right at me.
Did he see you?
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, crap. You know, just like, and it's raining. So, like, we have a standoff for probably a minute.
And what's Adam doing?
Or 2 minutes. He's standing at the base of the tree. But the way way the rise was, you couldn't see. Like, he could not see us if we were on the ground. Hindsight, what I should have done probably, like, I just froze. What I should have done is just took two steps real slow, real quick down the ladder, got out of sight. I'm not sure what I would have done then, but it was like, so he lays there for a minute or two, stands up, shakes off, and then kind of trots off the other direction. I could watch him go for quite a ways. So I'm like, well, that's a bummer, but what do you do? Like, I mean, hang the stand, get up in the tree, we're all ready to rock. Well, a little bit later, I see a doe skirting through that grass, and there's another buck behind her, so I'm feeling good. Well, it's still windy. It's raining. That rain quits. And it was like that rain quit, light switch. I could see some bucks and chasing kind of off to our east. Next thing I know, I was turning around and talked to Adam and I heard these cranes flying through there. And right where we walked in, and I kind of looked back that direction. And here comes this buck marching right towards us. I mean, it was like this thing came out of nowhere and marches right in and
same buck.
Nope. Completely different buck. Ended up shooting them and it was game over, but it was a cool hunt. It was a tough hunt. There was a lot of strategy and moving in those 5 or 6 days. But again, that was what it was. It was like, okay, what are the deer doing? Where are they going to? And just trying to be there. And I think that's a lot of what this time of year up here is bringing, like figure out what the does are doing, try to be in the tree, spend your time in there. Because if you do, you know, things are going to break loose eventually. Like you're going to have pockets and you can go from really hot to not in a hurry. But if you're in there and you're thinking about what the deer are doing, you know, chances are good eventually, you know, out in the woods.
Yeah. Well, first congrats on the buck.
Yeah.
Looked like a great buck. Can't wait to watch footage. Should be a pretty sweet hunt breakdown. So you're in Kansas or probably more. What date was that?
That was last Friday.
What day you shoot it? Sixth.
So first week in November.
Yeah.
So that's probably more pre-rut down there.
Yeah, for sure. Pre-rut. Like we saw some bumping and a little bit of chasing, but not peak rut, full chase period by any means.
So I can picture what, you know, heading into the peak rut or what we're calling lockdown or lock on looks like up here, you know, terrain wise, like the thick bedding areas, the draws, the fingers, the, you know, old pond dams, like just all that kind of. So in that situation in Kansas where you were, you know, you said big flat, a little bit of mesquite, maybe some draw, maybe some, you know, creek bottoms or something. What would that look like now in a lock on phase? So for people that are hunting that type of terrain, what does that look like there?
Well, I can tell you, not that I was disappointed at all that I shot that buck that night. And that was, tickled pink, but like I was sitting there thinking now, again, this is a week or so ago. I was thinking like, man, I can't wait to get in here in the morning. It's going to be cold and get my black rack out and rattle because it was the type of spot that classic Kansas. Like I was so excited sitting in the tree that evening. I'm like, the morning's going to be fire. I can't wait to get in here and call and see that. Now, what does that look like now? Once we're in kind of peak rut and that lockdown phase, I think it's, you're going to see those deer, those big ones with does. You know, and I think you got to get if a big one, and that's talking to those guys down there, that's it. If you get a doe that's coming into a spot and you get a big buck on her, you're going to have 3 days to kill him. And he's going to come in there. He's going to be right in that area with the doe, find those little pockets that, you know, a big buck's got a doe, or where a doe might come in and a big buck's going to show up and keep her there, you know, take advantage of that pretty quick. Otherwise, he's going to move on and he's going to search. And they can search for a long ways out there. Now, there's a lot of deer, but they can cover a mile like nothing there because the timber is so limited. It's not like here. You know, they have these grass pockets and whatever else, but they're moving. They're checking these grassy spots and these big brush areas, but they're spread out.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking when JJ said over here, and he's explaining how we got the draws and the bedding and all this kind of stuff. And I was picturing in my mind, because I've been out to Texas and out in that big flat area before myself. So, yeah, you got that mesquite, but it is. It's really sparse. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, them does are probably spread out and not getting harassed like the does are here where they're more in a condensed area. And so knowing and talking to people and seeing how deer have been shot and stuff using our products throughout the years, them bucks cruise a long way, and decoys seem to be really receptive out there. Rattling seems to be really good out there. Calling could be especially good, but you're going to need a louder, more aggressive if it's at a distance in the wind, you know, and we get a call for that a lot of times. You know, we keep our stuff more normal volume, but there's ways to reach them. You know, with the extinguisher, a doe bleat can get super loud. So, and that's what they're looking for anyway.
Man, if I'm in Kansas right now, I'm going and finding like a spot where I know some does are probably, or one of those thicker pockets, maybe where I can see a long ways. And I'm going to plant my butt in that tree and I'm going to wait and I'm going to use calling to my advantage. And I'm going to get somewhere where I can get a visual on deer, because I know that those bucks are going to cruise and they're going to come and check these pockets.
Yeah.
So I'm getting close to a pocket. And I'm going to sit there and wait, and I'm going to call. But, you know, I'm going to visually kind of watch it happen, because knowing those bucks are traveling a long ways, and just wait it out.
Yeah. Seems like this cold front coming in here too. I don't know if, yeah, hopefully some of these big bucks are going to be on the move and not locked down too much. But I think I'm more excited coming into that next, you know, 5 to 7 days from now, kind of when we started hunting our bucks last year.
Yeah.
That's what really gets me excited right now. I'm a little bit.
I would say right now,
not too confident on the next couple of days, but
yeah, I would say,
especially with our gun season wrapping up too, we got kind of another variable here we've talked about on the last podcast. But
I don't know though. You know, I mean, because of the heat, I would have been hunting. I didn't hunt water, but I would have been. See, I'm laying back a little bit because I got my buck. You know what I mean, off the property, so I'm being a little bit more. Conservative with when and where and how I hunt, and I don't want to mess it up. You know, I don't want to be aggressive because the rut was just starting, and we know this is where we are now. The first few sets of does are coming into estrus and they're starting to lock on and they're starting to do that kind of behavior, but we know, and they'll go nocturnal because of the pressure of the gun, you know, but we know from past experience that, and we used to never hunt gun season because we were afraid to bump the property, but that's changed completely because we're very confident that we know how to hunt and we got the property set up well enough where we can get in and out without blowing it up, you know, and we don't go into core areas at all. So anyway, with all that being said, we know what's going to happen is that they'll start getting more and more of these does bred. And once they start getting the most of them bred, like 75% to 90% of them, that's when they're going to go out and start searching. That's where they're going to start looking, because they just, that's the best time. And that's when we both shot our deer.
Yeah. And we shot them during gun season, but it seems like here in Minnesota, season B is less, there are less hunters out there. Typically in the past it was a doe season, but not anymore. It's a either sex season, but it just seems like there's less hunters out there. They're typically more meat hunting, shooting does early and stuff. And then it's that post rut, which, you know, the bucks start cruising. Our property typically gets better because of all the pressure everywhere else, driving them in, how we get the food in the cover. So, and I'm just more excited about that phase. But there's still a window here. Chris is jumping out there today. And
yep, that's why he's not in the podcast.
Some crop stuff going on, farmers taking out corn and things like that. So still a lot of moving parts, a lot of bucks on the move, a lot of big bucks getting shot. Trying to capitalize next couple of days.
That's another point that I was going to bring up earlier is now as we get in Minnesota, and it's probably different parts of the country, obviously it is, once those crops start getting out 70, 80, 90%, the woods just light up. The timber lights up, you know what I mean? And that's where, you know, it starts to get really good too. And that's the other thing, that third week of November, that's pretty much the game. We got, I would say, what are we, about 70% right now of corn out?
Yeah, pretty much. 80, I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Andy this morning. He's down in southern Iowa, southeast Iowa. And you've been down in Iowa filming a little bit too now here. He said it seems like the pre-rut's a little bit delayed even and still trickling on. Like, it's still a lot of good action. Bucks aren't locked down there. Still a lot, you know, they're calling.
It seemed like it was a little late this year for some reason.
They're calling in a lot of bucks right now. They had their number one hit lister 20 yards last night. And so, I mean, they're having a lot of great success right now. Now, that might taper off quick as they get more lockdown down there, a little more south where we were. Maybe you can talk about what you saw in Iowa. And but yeah, everywhere you go, it's a little bit different. So you got to just kind of, you know, tweak your strategies a little bit. But it's that time of the year. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, so I spent a day in Iowa here on the way back filming, and you know, we kind of saw that same thing. It wasn't full rut on, and we saw pre-rut activity, but I'll tell you what, they had just cut some corn on the farm that we were hunting. The does were there, and what happened? Just before dark, an hour before dark, all the bucks were coming there because that's where the does were, in there bumping them and chasing them. And you know, like, they're not full finding a doe and locking her down, but they're checking every single one. So food sources, you know, we think less about food sources now, but food sources can be really good because in the evenings, you know, does are going there to feed. Bucks, if they haven't found a doe yet, they know where those food sources are again and are going to come check them. Minnesota, that's going to be my strategy coming up here. Now I'm tagged out. We have Adam who's going to be hunting here this next week. I'm really looking forward to, not necessarily this weekend, but early next week. And we put in one of the new food plots with some cool stuff that we're testing out this year. We had it fenced all year. That fence is coming down today. Now, in about 4 days from now, I can promise you, wind's going to switch a little bit. We're going to be there. There's been a lot of activity around there. I think those deer are going to, they're going to flock to that food once it's open now. I think the does are going to be there. And I think bucks, when they come off a doe, if they're on a doe now, or they're looking for a hot doe, they're going to be right in there. And I think it's going to be kill time. So I think this next week coming up here and find where the does are, and
yeah,
bucks will be there.
Yeah. Last night I was out hunting a big field, kind of more of a hay field. Every buck I saw was on doe. They were all dinks, just chasing does through the field. But then in the evening, right at last light, I had about 15 does come out, and not a single buck followed them. So that tells me that, yeah, big bucks are kind of locked down back in the thick stuff. They, you know, all these does came out, and they're looking around, waiting for a buck to come out, and maybe eventually some buck did. But yeah, last night, they were all just kind of flooding out there. It just seemed like most of the bucks were, you know, wrapped up with doe, you know, doe and heat, doe and estrus, and not going out to the big fields yet. But as we transition into next week, we've always seen, you know, mid-November, third week in November, big bucks start to show up and really hit those big open fields at night, trying to find that last hot doe. So if you see a doe with her mouth open too and she's walking through, like, be ready, because probably something on her. Don't know what size a buck it is, but there's got to be something on her, so get ready.
That's a good tip. Also, you know, the cornfields are all bedding, and I'm, you know, kind of confident that some of the bigger bucks just love those because it just keeps them out of all the activity in the timber, especially this time of the year. You know, there's so much going on in there. People are running in and out, and tree stands are going up, and you're filling water tanks, and you know, it's just, there's so much going on there, and then all of a sudden they just show up out of nowhere. It's like, well, how did I not get that deer on camera anywhere? You know, where in the heck are they? I don't think they're in that core timber as much as a person might think. The really older bucks, I think they like that outlying, and in this case it's, you know, many square miles of standing corn. Now that's all going to change too. So it's time to start thinking, well, they're going to go back to their confident areas where they know, as long as they're not getting bumped. And so that's kind of our strategy. I mean, that's just what we do. We have places that no human ever touches. And to be honest with you, I would say it's at least 50% of the property. Would you say that a human does not go into?
More than that, yeah.
Probably more than that. So, and then I wanted there's another comment I wanted to make when I was listening to some of our stories and experiences this last couple of weeks. We're talking about, yeah, the bucks are flying all over. I saw this, and that. People, be patient, okay? Be patient, because when we're talking about we're seeing bucks are flying everywhere, we are in the stand from noon until at least 4 to 6 hours. And we're seeing four bucks is like where they're running around like crazy. That's an hour or more per sighting. Keep that in mind now. It's not like there are rabbits running around out there. You got to be patient. You got to put the time in the stand. And then there's a couple sits where I saw a bunch of bucks. JJ didn't see anything. Chris was there all day long. All day. Didn't see one dink, I think. You know, and this is the same day. And the day before in the stand that he was at, that's when the shooter showed up. So you got to grind. Now is the time to grind. So when we're saying, you know, we're seeing all kinds of action, this and that, we are, but keep it in perspective what that means. You know what I mean? Grind it, dude. Get out there and be smart and be patient. And now I'm going to put my plug in, okay? So we'll do the Paul Harvey Wells Lamont Glove commercial here. But so I got rid of all my Sitka this year. All right. This is my first time getting into Osseo gear. And JJ's saying, well, you should just be wearing the lightweight and this and this and this and that. And I'm like, I don't think so, you know, because I was, you know what heavier clothes you need when it's getting colder. We had that little colder snap. It was like 30s, low 40s. I think that day, and it was really windy and it was kind of cool all day long. And I'm like, do I go to my late season here or can I get away with mid? And so I listened to JJ. And I put on my mid hoodie and my mid pants, and then I brought my mid jacket, put it in because I didn't want to overheat going on the stand. Got up there, windy, 17 mile an hour wind. And I had to cool down. Then I put on the jacket, and I was so comfortable all night long. And then it rained on me the last, 40 minutes? So I got this cold rain coming on me. And I, honest to God, was so comfortable, and it was way less bulky. And deer were not looking up at me at all. Once again, they didn't know I was there. They didn't even think there was anything there. So, big plug for Osseo, dude. It's panning out to be what everybody's saying it was and what we talked about. And I just wondered, that's part of that patience and part of that grind that I'm talking about.
Yeah. And we, you know, we always say what the optimum time to be in the stand and what, you know, in theory is the best time. But I look back, I'm just thinking in my head while you guys are talking, look back at all the past hunts you've had in this time period, this next 7 days. What have you seen? You know, I'm thinking, have I shot bucks during this period? Got two bucks on November 16th. Over the years, one in Wisconsin, one in Minnesota, and both were at very first light. They were on a hot doe. So we're saying hunt midday, they're going to be cruising. Yeah, but
good point.
In reality, you know, other than Skyscraper, which is still another 10 days off from where we are now, the two bucks I've shot during this window on the 16th were like first light on a hot doe, moving slow in thick cover, like. So that's just a situation where obviously.
So think about
that. Morning can work out too. I don't know.
That's
any time of the day. It can happen any time of the day.
It can happen any time of the day, but that's based off the doe behavior. Okay. So
more of a lucky.
I mean, here's my mind on it. Is she getting up and being nocturnal and feeding like her normal habit and not want to run around during the day?
Both times it was going back to bed in the morning. Exactly. I beat him to the bed.
You beat him to the bed. So that's the behavior of the doe got you that buck.
Or maybe they were in a bed in a different spot and they were just bouncing around.
Right.
But yeah, back in the bedding early morning.
But it wasn't a hard push. He was just, once again, locked on.
Right.
So what she did is what he did.
Can't go wrong being in or close to a bedding area right now this time of year. And whether the does are just coming there or you get a big buck that's cruising, looking for does that are in that bedding area. If you can find one of the deer bedding, go sit by it because it can happen anytime. And it's a great place to be all day long. If you have the ability to do it, grind it out, like you said. So any time of the day, it can happen right now. Now we'll shift eventually here, you know, into more of that post rut phase, but this good rut phase will hang on now for, you know, a week or 2 weeks where bucks will still be cruising and looking for those does. Some scrapes will open back up, but not like they were before. You know, again, good time to be in the woods.
So yeah. I'll go by your last comment here. I don't know, maybe you don't want this topic or not, but
no, really.
I've been thinking, of course, I'm sitting in a tree now, I'm retired, right? So I can spend my time out there and I can think, and you know, the natural idea guy mind doesn't go away. It's always with you. So I'm sitting there and I'm looking what's happening with JJ and his experiences, what's happening with Chris and his experiences, what's happening with me and my experiences. And we got some big changes coming up on the property. And we've been really taking our time because once you do something, you know, aggressive, you can't take it back. Then you got to try and fix it. So we hinge cut right away because we knew we wanted some hinge cut. And there was some predetermined trails in there that people were riding ATVs on and stuff like that. And I was thinking about this time of the year more specifically when bucks are cruising. And I thought, we need to lay this property out so that we can get in and out without bumping the bedding. And when you said hunt by the bedding, the key word to that, people, is by. Not in, not on top of, but by the bedding. And the best strategy in my brain, or my idea at that time to do that, was to create these natural cruising lanes where they're going to want to go. So you can actually go in there and create these cruising lane trails where you want them to be, close by the bedding. And then also create areas where you can dip in and dip out and within the natural, you know, terrain of the land. Like in our case, it's valley with points. So I'm just thinking they love cruising the tops of those bluffs and they love bedding on the tips. And of course there's hinge cut in that area. So that's going to be your bedding. And then you can have these cruise lanes and just, so my brain's just going and I'm thinking we could set the entire property up that way, not have to physically go in there and be detected in any way, thicken it up. And, you know, we're going to just make this thing better and better and better and better. And it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. Pretty much every time I sit in a tree, I'm thinking, how can we make this better? Where should I be sitting?
Like, right.
Hardly ever.
Where should I sit?
Satisfied with the situation.
Well, and our winds are so, they're fairly consistent now. And we're seeing that we have some weak spots for certain winds. So we can create stuff for that too. You know what I mean? We can make it better. But it's pressure, pressure, pressure. There's three people hunting 200 acres. You know, if you're an average guy and you used to hunt the old school way, that's blown up in a day. Three people go and hunt that thing, you're done. By the end of the week, 2-3 days, you've already blown it out. And we're able to hunt it for months without blowing it up. What's that tell you? There's strategy to this stuff.
For sure. So as much as we say, just dive in the woods and hunt, you know, make sure your scent control is good. Make sure you have the tools that you need to get in and out of there. Make sure you have the tools that you need, you know, to communicate with these deer if need be. It's a great time to communicate still as well. So lots of different factors in there. But again, to sum it up, time to grind. Mike said it, get in the woods and great time of year to be there. So we're going to wrap this up. Hopefully Chris can see a big buck tonight. There's been lots of action there. So he is due. Fingers crossed for him today. We're going to be out this next week. We'll have a follow-up next week for you. Hopefully some success and what strategies worked and what didn't. And then also be talking about the next stage of that rut. So post-rut, what strategies are there and how we're going to tackle those. So good luck out there in the woods. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, make sure you download the free Deer Society app. Lots of instructionals on there. Also hunt breakdowns, lots of cool content from this time of year. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Thanks for tuning in and good luck out there. Well, I'm a
All our sponsors here at Deer Society are partners whose equipment we know we can trust are going to make you more successful and have a better experience in the field. Products like Illusion Systems, maker of the Black Rack, the Extinguisher, and the Phase Body Odor System. Tacticam, Reveal Cell Cameras, 10-Point Crossbows, Onyx Maps, Osseo Gear, Huiman, and Big Frig.